Are we headed toward a federal government shutdown? Republican Congressman John Shimkus says if so, he's pointing the finger at Democrats, saying they're using the issue of DACA when they don't need to.
Unfortunately, they're trying to leverage this when we want to keep the government open. We want to pay for CHIPS spending for 6 years. We want to increase money to the military.
He talks about the shutdown, what he thinks needs to happen with immigration, and more. The NFL playoffs are happening this weekend without the Chicago Bears.
It belongs to the top 5% of bad seasons, but they cleaned up business by firing John Fox.
WBEZ Sports contributor Cheryl Raystout joins us. But first, a year ago, millions of people gathered for women's marches all over the country. This year, women in several parts of Illinois are gathering again for the second year. Stay tuned. It's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Last year at this time, around 250,000 people were getting ready to fill downtown Chicago for the first Women's March. That was this weekend last year. There were also others around the state, Bloomington, Normal, Rockford, Peoria, and of course, a massive turnout in Washington a day after the inauguration of President Donald Trump. Now people are preparing for a second rally tomorrow. There are marches planned from Springfield to Carbondale to Chicago, as well as the Quad Cities, Galesburg, Maryville. This year, many are being dubbed the March to the Polls, with the focus shifting from resistance against a new administration to future elections on the state and local level. Why are people turning out again this year?
I'm coming in to participate in the march on Saturday with my 26-year-old daughter. We both missed out last year, and having seen what an enormous event it was and what an impact it had on energizing women for humanitarian issues affecting all of us, we felt we couldn't let another year go by and not participate.
That's Connie from Morris, Illinois. She's going to Chicago. Are you planning to participate? And how are you feeling as 1 year has passed? Give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet us. Our handle's 21STShow. Right now, we've assembled women from all over the state. On the line from Chicago, where she's traveled for the Women's March tomorrow morning, is the president of the League of Women Voters of Illinois, Bonnie K. Cox. She lives in Galena. Joe Miner is also a League of Women Voter based in Rockford. She marched there last year and will be again tomorrow. Deborah Bandy is the co-founder of Action Illinois, one of the organizers of Springfield's Women's March. And Liz Hunter, the founder of Women United Network, is the organizer of the Southern Illinois March to the Polls in Carbondale. Ladies, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nyla. Glad to be here.
Liz, let's start with you. What prompted you to organize this year's march in Carbondale?
In Carbondale, I think that, you know, we had a great march last year. And so, you know, we were certainly called to commemorate the Women's March from last year. But we also, after seeing sort of the unfolding of the new administration and new Congress over the last year, have seen some urgency. So now we're moving from anticipation to being called to action. And so we're really hoping that this march in Carbondale is all about action and getting out to the polls and getting out to vote in the 2018 election.
Liz, did you go? You went to D.C. last year, correct? Who did you go with?
I did. I went to Washington, D.C., and I traveled there with my mother and my brother. So we went as a family.
And how did your whole family react to being there? What was the takeaway? What were the takeaways for you all?
Well, we really enjoyed ourselves, but we also, you know, were able to kind of get together as activists rather than family. My brother hadn't been as active. He came showing support for my mother and I, but once we got there, I think he realized, you know, what people were marching for and the issues that it was all about. So he has since become much more active and interested in continuing being up on current events and what's going on in the world. So,
Joe, what brought you out to Rockford last year to march?
Well, it was the time. looking at what happened at the election, looking how women were devalued, I believed, during the election process, it was time for women to stand up and be counted. And we had an unbelievable outpouring of women in Rockford, Illinois, and it was so wonderful to be with all these women and take part in the camaraderie and the shared interest. Women are not a monolithic group. There are certain issues that are important to all women.
How many people came out to Rockford last year, Joe?
There were 1,000 people. And for a town the size of Rockford, that was really amazing, particularly since it was just a small grassroots starting. We never expected to have that many people. In the beginning, we thought maybe we'd have 200.
And what particular issues are bringing you out again this year, Joe?
Well, certainly the League, of course, is very interested in having people's votes count. We're very pro-vote. You need to get out there. You need to be counted. And again, it's the women's issues. There's so many things going on in this country. Women have taken a back seat for too long. It's amazing to me that we don't even have the ERA amendment to the Constitution. And that started in the 70s. It is past time. Women are a powerful group. We have strong voices. We do what we say we're going to do. We're committed. It's time to shine the light on women.
Deborah Bandy from Springfield, you went to D.C. last year. Did you travel in a big group?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a big group out there. So we started Action Illinois after the election of November 2016, and we like to say after the horrible results in the presidential election. And so I had actually made plans to go to D.C. with some friends of mine from throughout the country and had made flight arrangements and such. And then once Action Illinois started to grow rapidly, we had a lot of interest from our members who wanted to go out there. So we put together a bus trip. We had 2 busloads of women who drove out, or who rode the buses, I should say, and I met them out there. Now, we ended up not being able to meet up because there were so many people. And Liz, I know you were there. It was just kind of hard to get around, but we were able to keep in touch via cell phone. And I ended up marching alone or with strangers out there because I had left my group of friends from throughout the country to meet our Action Illinois members and ended up not being able to be with any of them.
But yeah, what was that like?
Cool about that.
Yeah, Deborah, what was that like?
I loved it, actually, because I thought what I loved the most about the march in Washington was the collaborative nature of it. And it was like, it was so peaceful and people were in it together. So I met new friends. I still keep in touch with a couple of them that are from the D.C. area. And I found my voice. I had not ever participated in anything like that. I'm 55 years old. And it was the first time that I was angry enough and strong enough to have my voice heard. I don't have, I'm kind of the outcast in my family when it comes to my political and activism roles. And so it was the first time that I was able to say, I'm going to have my voice heard. It's going to be heard publicly, and I want to make a difference. This is not okay. We are not a country that's based on hate. We are a country that's based on love, and we have got to protect this precious democracy of ours.
That's Deborah Bandy from Springfield talking about her experience in D.C. last year. She's helping organize the march in Springfield this year. That's taking place tomorrow. Bonnie K. Cox, I wanted to go to you as you're hearing Deborah talk about how she found her voice as president of the League of Women Voters in Illinois. Do you, when you think back to last year to Chicago and you being in Chicago at that march, did you meet and encounter many women like Deborah who maybe were coming out for the first time?
Definitely. That was one of the things. And it wasn't just the women, but there were many men talking about the issues as well. And, you know, what was interesting and encouraging for me was I was hearing people having concern about issues that the league had really been involved in studying and looking at, coming to consensus on, and working for generations. So it was going so beyond what would just be considered women's issues. And of course, the thing about the league is our name goes back to when women got the right to vote, when the 19th Amendment was passed. But we are a group of women and men who are working on issues like the Clean Power Plan. We had been working so hard to support the Affordable Health Care Act. We always work to prevent voter suppression and so on. And it's a model of citizenship that encourages voting, but also says go beyond voting and get involved in your local community. Work on the issues that are closest to you. And so we could see this great outpouring for people wanting to be involved in this democracy and knowing they couldn't take it for granted. And, of course, we have been feeling and working like that for 98 years. I know someone mentioned the Equal Rights Amendment. Maybe it was Joe. You know, the Equal Rights Amendment is just two states away from ratification. And basically, it was the state of Illinois in the 1970s that put a kibosh on it. And now we have this opportunity to be one of two states that could push us over the top. So this is an amazing opportunity for women and men who support equal rights and having that in our Constitution. This is the year to do that in Illinois, a very unique opportunity.
That's Bonnie K. Cox, president of the League of Women Voters of Illinois. She's on the line from her cell in Chicago, where she is in town for the march taking place tomorrow. Liz, if we head back to Southern Illinois, you march tomorrow in Carbondale. We've heard lots of different issues mentioned here. Is there a specific issue that you are focusing on tomorrow?
We are focused on the mission of March to the Polls, but with that March to the Polls, I think comes all of the issues, and that's a common theme that I'm hearing the ladies talk about today, is that there are so many issues that affect women and families. So, you know, marching to the polls may mean go vote, but it also means go vote for the things that you care about and become active in the things that you care about. So within our events, we are going to host a community engagement forum, too, where we have 40 different organizations from throughout Southern Illinois, political candidates to share their platform, and a place for our community to start getting involved in the issues that they choose to care about. Because there are so many, the environment, social issues, the right to health care, living wages, those sort of things are things that we're really focused on and that the organizations that are going to be at our event are focused on.
Joe, I wanted to ask you, mentioned as you were talking about Rockford and being around all of these people and the energy that you got from it. I wonder if I could ask you about the past year. There's so much that has happened in the past 12 months, lots of emotional emotions I think people have involved in politics and watching what's happening. Has that been hard for you? Do you feel fatigued or energized by what's happened over the past year, Joe?
Well, in all honesty, certainly some of the things that have happened have been so disconcerting that it has put a dampening on how I feel. But then I think we need to change this, and that energizes not only me but my friends. We can do something about it. We must do something about it. This is our country. We need to take it back. One of the other things that the Rockford League has been very vocal and supportive of is the DACA and Dreamers, and we've had forums espousing the problem, telling people about it, asking for help, and that certainly is going to be one of the things on the march tomorrow.
Deborah, what about you? Have you had political fatigue?
Oh, yes. I think we all have. And, you know, a lot of members of our group have, too, because we have had numerous rallies throughout the year, rallies in support of the ACA, rallies in support of DACA and the DREAM Act, rallies just to make sure that our elected officials hear our voices. We've also had a lot of our members on a regular basis reach out to their both state and federal elected officials. So yes, we do have that. So, you know, what we've tried to do and what I've tried to do myself is to learn that, you know, like we all get told on an airplane, we have to put our mask on first before we put one on a child that might be traveling with us. And so we have to take care of ourselves. And whatever that means to each individual, do something that you can take care of yourself, because we have got to continue to make our voices heard. This is a very precarious time in our country, and it's one in which when history looks back on us, we are going to be told that we were on the right side of history. Our movement is on the right side of history, and we have got to just keep pushing forward one foot in front of the other. And so we have a lot of people that have been working on our march. We're expecting upwards of 1,000 people, possibly more. Have Susana Mendoza as our keynote. Other political figures are going to be there. We have people reading poetry. We have music. So it should be an event that will inspire and also will make sure that people will get to the polls.
Get
and
to the
vote.
Polls, yeah.
And one last quick thing.
You know,
to
unfortunately, we're out of time. So, but I want to thank all of you for joining me, Liz Hunter, Deborah Bandy, Joe Miner, Bonnie K. Cox. We've got information about all of these marches at our website, 21stshow.org. Ladies, thank you for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Budu, you're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in. If you've been paying attention to the news, you know that last night the House voted in favor of the fourth short-term stopgap spending plan for the federal government. But it doesn't look like Republicans have garnered enough support in the Senate for the bill. The deadline for a federal government shutdown is midnight tonight. We've been speaking with members of our Illinois congressional delegation all week ahead of this shutdown. Yesterday afternoon, before the House vote, I caught up with Congressman John Shimkus. The Republican congressman represents a wide swath of southern and central Illinois, part or all of 33 counties. Representative Shimkus, welcome to the 21st.
It is great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this big deadline. You are a very busy person today with the government shutdown looming, with a vote scheduled for later this afternoon. So I should note to our audience, we're talking to you on Thursday before the vote takes place. What do you think needs to happen today, Representative?
Well, I think the vote is, our vote series, it will be 7 to 8 o'clock tonight. My guess is we pass this bill out of the House, and then we see if the Senate can garner the bipartisan majority to break the filibuster, to put to cast a vote on keeping the government open. You know, that's the playing field right now.
And so as we think about that, as we think about the issues that have come up in the past week about this, I wanted to start with CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. President Trump actually tweeted this morning that he thinks there needs to be a permanent solution to the program, not a short-term one. The continuing resolution allows for a six-year reauthorization. Do you think that's enough time for the program?
Well, it's a lot better. The previous bill, which was $8 billion, was 5 years. So this is longer than the previous bill. I mean, I don't really spend a lot of time commenting on the president's tweet. If I tweets, I'd be talking all day on stuff that there's no way I know what's really going on with the president. All I know is this is going to be included in the CR. So this is part of that CR package. It's 6 years. It's scored as bringing in money. And it's needed. There are states that are running out of money. So it's a big deal.
You think the CHIP program is a big deal?
Well, I think it's all a big deal, but chip is definitely a big deal.
And I think one thing that Democrats have said is a big deal. I spoke to your colleague across the aisle, Sherry Bustos, about this yesterday, is DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Representative, what to your mind needs to happen with this program?
Well, it's not going to be part of the CR. I think we are moving in a great direction, but the Democrats are, you know, they are saying that there's some deadline Friday. There's no deadline on Friday. DACA is DACA. DACA is an issue that may be a deadline in March, but we're far from March. And unfortunately, they're trying to leverage this when we want to keep the government open. We want to pay for chip spending for 6 years. We want to increase money to the military. You know, we've had approximately 100 military deaths last year. 20 was in combat, 80 was in training exercises, and the stories are out there about how we have not funded our military to the appropriate amount, and it's hurt in our training and our readiness. Then you throw in the medical device tax issue, you throw in the Cadillac tax. I'm really, and then you keep the government open, which is what everybody wants to do. So I'm not sure what is there not to like about the CR.
In terms of DACA, regardless of taking it apart from the budget resolution and what Democrats are saying, what's your position on DACA? What would you like to see happen?
Well, we've always been about a comprehensive immigration policy, and there's really a lot of good discussion going on. My district, as you noted in the intro, is 33 counties. It's a very conservative area. So the question is, in a conservative part of the state of Illinois, what is our approach to immigration? And this is part of the immigration. This is part of the illegal immigration portion of the immigration debate. So having said that, Americans are very compassionate. We want to keep families united. We want to make sure that these dreamers or the DACA kids, that they have legal status. But we're not for immediate amnesty and citizenship. So as we're dealing with that, there's border security, there's chain migration, there's issues on the lottery system, other things that there are bills out there that, you know, you've got a bill with Lindsey Graham and Senator Durbin. You've got a House bill people are discussing by Bob Goodlatte and Michael McCall from Homeland Security. You've got Raul Labrador from Idaho. A lot of members who have had different positions on this whole debate are sitting down trying to find the common ground on something that we can move and addressing legal status for this section of the immigrant population is something that will be included.
Senators Graham and Durbin, their proposal, is that something that you would support?
Not by itself. I mean, that's the whole issue. We want a comprehensive approach. We've got time. We're not going to be forced to leverage shutting down the government over this issue. There are a lot of my colleagues have a lot of ideas on some of these other reforms that needed to take place, and this should be part of that debate.
Representative, I want to ask you about the notion that you have time in terms of immigration reform, just because I feel like I talk to a lot of business folks and people who are students or people who are working to hire immigrants who say they feel like this has been a mess for a long time and really needs to be fixed. Do you think that your colleagues in the House could get something together before March?
First of all, DACA, those prepositions you just placed has nothing to do with DACA, right? So you're talking about the other portions of immigration reform, like the visa system. H-2A, H-2B, part of the proposal out of the House is an H-2C, a new visa entry program. Our immigration system has been broke for a long time. So this is the time to obviously work together, address the concerns, find that sweet spot that brings enough people together in support and reform to move, you know, major immigration reform. And DACA could be very helpful in part of this debate as we address providing legal status to you know, young men and women who came here illegally based upon maybe being brought in by their family members. Regardless of that, they need legal status. you know, the president, when he ended the program, he ended it for us to fix it, is the issue, and to fix it legally through legislation, not through a presidential fiat. And so we have to go to work. And that means we got to pass a bill. And to pass a bill, it's got to have multi, you know, it's got to address multi provisions in the immigration reform that people have concerns. And the president's, one of the president's major issues is going to be border security.
I'm speaking with Representative John Shimkus. Representative, you are an Army veteran, almost 3 decades of military service, and I wanted to ask you about a local story. I'm sure you've noticed the deaths, about the tragic veteran deaths that have happened at the Quincy Veterans Home in Illinois. What do you think needs to happen at that facility?
Well, I know the governor spent a lot of time down there. I used to represent Quincy. I've been to the Quincy Veterans Home, or I didn't exactly represent half of that county. That's Adams County. I represented half that county, so I've been there. And, you know, the governor's got a plan to, I think, you know, redo some new plumbing and make sure that the water system and potable water is clean and to be used. I mean, it's a, when we have these problems with veterans' deaths, and you point to government-run facilities, whether it's Illinois Veterans Hospital, a VA hospital, it does really cause you to question our total reliance on a VA system. So what we hear going on right now with the administration is, let's give the veterans a choice. We and now the state veterans home is different than the VA system and the federal system, so I want to make sure I stay in my lane here. My lane is the federal government. What we have said is the veterans should have a choice. The veterans should have a choice, either to access care through a VA hospital and system, which a lot of my veterans do and they love it, but they also should have the option to choose care outside if they have bad experiences and they trust local doctors and local hospitals.
And in the case of this facility, it sounds like you're saying you think the governor's got a handle on it in terms of a plan to fix the home, and hopefully, obviously, no one wants to see any more deaths happen.
Well, no one ever wants to see an unneeded, unwanted, you know, a death that occurs because of negligence. I just think, there is a plan. The governor spent a lot of time there. Now he just needs to execute. And I would point to the fact that at the federal level, we want the veteran to have a choice of which access to care they choose.
Congressman, I also wanted to just ask you very quickly about net neutrality, the idea that internet companies need to treat all data on the internet the same. Do you think this has been harmful for rural areas and for rural broadband? I know this is an issue that's really important to you.
I think it's unrelated. First of all, the biggest concern of what we call throttling or delaying data transmission is what we call the edge providers. It's the Googles, it's the Apples. This is another example of a federal agency creating a rule outside of legislation. And what we need is a legislative fix. Now, my colleague Marsha Blackburn has legislation to create some protections, but I would ask the question, if you want to incentivize build-out, do you incentivize build-out through government control? And the answer is absolutely not. There's got to be an incentive to people who form capital, assume risk, to build out with a hope of return on investment. So a government-controlled, regulated, in essence, pipe does not provide that incentive. In fact, it would do just the opposite. It's a disincentive for people who want to raise capital, assume risk.
And so in order to provide better services to rural areas, what would you suggest?
Well, we have when we had a government, when we did the stimulus and the president, the old administration overbuilt competing systems, that didn't help because you have providers who have clients and customers. The stimulus act that overbuilt with no customers, that didn't help. But we do have programs through USDA rural development that help incentivize build out.
One last question for you, Representative. I follow you on Twitter. I notice that you tweet different scripture passages daily. And I was just wondering, how do you choose what you tweet? Is it what you're studying that morning?
Yes. I mean, the Twitter phenomenon is fairly interesting. You know, people use it and receive it for a lot of different things. I don't really consider myself a social media, you know, profoundly engaged and connected individual, but I understand that this is how people follow me. And if they want to follow what I'm doing, I do a devotion every morning, and I tweet it, then I send a group text to some of my family members, and then I copy it and send it to my Bible class, which I teach on Sundays. And if people are following me right now, it's kind of interesting because I've changed. I'm going through read the Bible through in a year chronologically. So if people have followed me from the last week in December until now, you can see the movement from Genesis through Exodus. I'm kind of right, not in the middle, but right at the beginning of Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
So,
these
are verses that I've read that morning in a devotional setting, and I'll grab one, and I'll throw it out. And I just let the verse speak for itself. I don't editorialize. I don't proselytize.
I noticed. I always see him, so that's why I was wondering. I was like, this must be what he's reading in the morning. I was just curious.
Yeah, if you follow me, I missed today because I got distracted, and I still have to do it for today.
All right, well, we'll look for that later on this afternoon. Republican Congressman John Shimkus represents Illinois' 15th Congressional District, big part of central and southern Illinois, and just north of Champaign, all the way down to south to the Kentucky and Indiana borders, west almost to St. Louis. Representative Shimkus, thanks for taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me. Take care.
If you've been on Instagram or Twitter in the past few days, you may have seen posts from friends comparing their selfies to, say, a classic Renoir beauty, or if they weren't so lucky, maybe a Picasso. That's because they are some of the thousands of users who downloaded Google's Arts and Culture app, which is now the number one app for Apple and Android. It's got a large collection of art images, historical features, and learning tools. And yes, you can upload your own image to find out what piece of famous artwork you look most like. Celebrities like Minnie Driver posted a selfie next to Monk's famous The Scream, but before you run to your own device to get in on the fun, we in Illinois cannot do this. Google will not tell us why, but the Chicago Tribune's Allie Marotti has some ideas. She's on the line now from Chicago. Hey, Allie, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this Google Apps art selfie feature isn't available in Illinois and Texas. What do you think is the likely reason for this?
I think it's our strict biometric law that we have here in Illinois. Texas also has a similar law, but biometrics basically deal with facial fingerprint or iris scan. So basically what most people are familiar with this technology is when Facebook, for example, tags you in a photo. That's because it's using your biometric information, which kind of creates a map of your face. So Illinois has one of the strictest laws in the nation regarding biometrics and trying to sort of protect people's privacy around that. So I think that's the reason we don't have it here.
Do you think Google's being overly cautious?
I don't think they are being overly cautious. Illinois has kind of become a battleground for lawsuits surrounding this because it is so strict. Google actually has already faced lawsuits regarding this issue with facial tagging things. And, you know, we've seen a lot of cases with Shutterfly, for example, is another company that had a lawsuit here playing out in federal court. And it was somebody who, you know, had never used Shutterfly before that was suing the company because a friend had uploaded a photo of them, you know, and it had taken a map of his face. So there's kind of a lot of litigation that's going on here. So I don't think that they are being too cautious.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with the Chicago Tribune's Allie Marotti. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. We'll be right back. Thanks for tuning into The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. My guest is the Chicago Tribune's Ellie Marotti. We're talking about the new, most popular app on Apple and Android. It's Google's Arts and Culture app, which lets you compare your selfies to famous works of art. So this isn't allowed in Illinois because of our biometrics law. What's sort of the history of why Illinois has some of the most strictest laws in the country around this?
Well, the law was first passed in 2008. Just to explain a little bit of difference, there are a few other states. Like I mentioned, Texas does have a biometrics law. But in those other states, the attorney general has to bring a lawsuit, whereas in Illinois, a normal person, you or I, could bring a lawsuit against, you know, a major tech company. And we've seen a lot of that kind of coming out of Illinois. Facebook has been sued. There's been a lot of big kind of, you know, attention-grabbing lawsuits that have come of that.
And so of other companies, you mentioned Shutterfly. Do you think that this, as we look at the landscape of biometrics, do you think this is going to continue to be an issue for people in Illinois and Texas and states that are being strict about this?
I do. I think it'll be a matter of whether people notice or not. Nest, which is a company that Google's parent company, Alphabet, owns, and they make smart thermostats and doorbells and things like that, they have a product. One of their doorbells has a camera, and it you can make it use facial recognition software to tell you who your visitors are that are approaching. And that feature is also not available in Illinois. So we're already seeing some companies react to this. I've spoken with experts, and they say that, you know, there are kind of studies that are still being done about the danger of companies getting a hold of your biometric information. But basically the fear is that if one of those companies gets hacked or something, somebody could basically steal the map of your face or your fingerprint. It's sort of the same fear that you see with your social security number or your credit card number, but with a little bit of a headache, you can get new social security numbers and credit card numbers, but you can't really get a new face. So I think it'll kind of, we'll kind of have to see what happens, but yeah, some companies are already reacting.
Ellie, that makes sense in terms of what the privacy side of this is, what people's privacy concerns are. You did speak to some people who, regardless, have tried to find workarounds in order to use the Google Art feature here in Illinois. What are they doing?
Well, one guy I talked to was actually in Omaha for work when he first tried it, and it worked fine. And then he got home, and it didn't work. And he was a little bit flummoxed. You know, I think most of the time people are doing this, and it's, they think it's a user error, like it's something they're doing. They can't figure out how to use it. So other people are sending selfies to their friends in other states, and they're doing that. And then I talked to and heard from a couple of different people who said that they were kind of inexplicably able to use it. So I don't know if, you know, maybe they're getting bad reception, and the app couldn't tell that they were in Illinois. There was one guy who, like, you know, logged in from a different, the VPN set up in New York, which sounds like a lot of effort, and that's kind of funny.
No, it's very elaborate, all for an app. That's Ellie Marotti from the Chicago Tribune newsroom, where she is a business reporter, explaining a little bit more of the history. If you've tried to get this app, why you can't get it here in Illinois. Ellie, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The NFL playoffs are in full swing. There's only four teams left standing, and after the conference championship games on Sunday, we will know who will be playing in Super Bowl 52. And the NBA season is almost halfway finished, and after an awful start, we know the Bulls aren't great, but maybe there's some signs of promise. Joining us to talk about this now is WBEC sports contributor Cheryl Raystout. Hey, Cheryl, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
So before we get to the conference championships, let's just talk about the Bears. Let's talk about our 5-11 season. In terms of terrible Bears seasons, which there have been many, how would you evaluate this past one?
It belongs in the top 5% of bad seasons, but they cleaned up business by firing John Fox. That had to happen, and it did happen. They went on and hired Matt Nagy. He's the he was the offensive coordinator for Kansas City, and he's quickly done a lot of things as far as changing the staff and retaining Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator, which is a good move. His hires have been very sound. So we'll know more about what he can do next season. This was a big offseason right away for Ryan Pace, the general manager. He has to do things right because his neck is on the line right now.
Do you feel like there's just kind of lackluster? I feel like I don't know if it's just less. I've seen a lot of Facebook posts about people saying that they are avoiding football this year. I don't know if you're seeing that, if you feel like, or if it's just the Bears being terrible. I just kind of feel out of the loop in terms of the NFL these days.
I think there is such a deep feeling about the negativity of the NFL, and it has nothing to do with Colin Kaepernick. I think people do not like what happens in the NFL, the injuries that happen, the concussion issue, I think, is so looming that a lot of people feel impacted by that because they have children that they do not want to play the sport, so they're not enjoying the sport. That's just my feeling. That's the way I look at it from what I've been seeing on postings.
Right. LeBron James isn't letting his kids play football. I mean, I feel like this is – do you feel like the culture is changing around how we view professional football? I don't know if that's too big of a question or it's too early to say.
It's hard to figure out for sure, but there's much more awareness than there ever has been before. Remember, football players play with helmets, so we don't see their faces. So there's been a detachment as far as being in the stands and watching the game. Now, all the ills of that sport are now being projected and it's being seen, and the concussion issue is real, and those statistics are real, and the fact that CTE can happen as young as a high school player, a college player, those are all real, and that's why I think there's more impact than there ever has been, and thankfully, because of social media.
And so that leads us to the playoffs, and I wonder what we'll see with viewership of the playoffs. I'm not sure what, Cheryl, what have we seen in terms of games in the playoffs? Are we seeing as many people watching as they have in the past?
It's pretty much on par. People do take an interest at this point because of the playoffs and the nature of that sport and the fact that what happens on scheduling, you don't see as many NBA games scheduled. You don't see hockey games scheduled. So it is a highlight. So that's why you're going to see the numbers don't really change that much. It's the regular season viewership that has gone down quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that makes sense, right, in terms of everybody kind of tunes into the playoffs, whether it's the NBA or, in this case, the NFL. Let's start with the games on Sunday. The New England Patriots are playing the Jacksonville Jaguars. I should add the Illinois tie. The Jaguars owned by University of Illinois graduate Shad Khan, who has been in the news a lot, actually, for his political statements that he's made in the past year as well as an NFL owner. He's the only person of color who owns an NFL team, right? So let's talk about how the Jaguars are doing, though. Let's get away from all the politics and all of that. How are the Jaguars? How are they going to do against the defending champ Patriots?
They got a tough challenge because Tom Brady is 7-0 in his career against the Jaguars. However, this year, what people don't, if they don't recall, is that Tom Coughlin, who used to be with the New York Giants and also was the first head coach of the Jaguars, has taken over operations of the team this year. And his stamp is there. They have a phenomenal defense. They are the number two team in sacks. They had some trouble getting to Pittsburgh's quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, last week. However, they are a very tough team. The negative on them is their quarterback is Blake Bortles, who is not a renowned quarterback at all. But they do have a great running back in Leonard Fournette, who, if he can't perform, he had a bad ankle last week, he's going to be the key. But we're looking at the Patriots are obviously going to have their defense really concentrate on the running game of the Jaguars and force Blake Bortles to throw, and that's where it's going to be interesting to see if he can handle that.
I would say we'll cheer for any team against the Patriots. That's always my default position in the NFL.
I think that's the way everyone feels right now, Nyla, because, you know, juggernauts are great, but sometimes you want to see a underdog win, and I'm tired of Tom Brady.
I'm still holding Deflategate against them as well. I'm still going to say I hold that grudge. I will hold that for a very long time. Let's talk about the NFC, the Vikings or the Eagles. Who's the favorite in that game, Cheryl?
Well, the Vikings are favorite, even though Philadelphia is the home team, because Philadelphia still is, you know, they don't have their star quarterback. Carson Wentz is out, and so they're riding Nick Foles. This is going to be a defensive game, I think. You're talking the Vikings coming off an unbelievable ending to their game when Case Kasem was able to connect with Stephon Diggs for that ending touchdown to beat New Orleans. So they're on a big high. But the Philadelphia Eagles have a very – these are two very strong defensive teams. And it could be like what Trent Dilfer was with, you know, when he was able to win with the Baltimore Ravens, where you are not a great quarterback, but you have a great defense. Sometimes that will work, and that could be what happens in this game.
Do you have a dream Super Bowl matchup right now? As opposed to, let's talk about your dream versus what you think the reality of is.
My dream would be the Vikings playing at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think that would be so cool. I think the networks would be upset because they want to have Tom Brady and the Patriots. But I think that would be it would be such a great story to have the Vikings. It would be the first team ever that would be the host team that would actually be playing in the Super Bowl. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be great. What do you think the reality is going to happen?
Reality is going to be the New England Patriots against, I think, the Vikings, but, you know, it's going to be New England.
All right, we'll cheer for our neighbors to the north. I'm going to cheer for the Vikings now. You've convinced me. Cheryl, let's talk about basketball for a minute. And I feel like for the last few times we've talked sports, we've completely ignored the Bulls because they've been terrible. And the last Bulls game I was at was when they were playing the Heat, actually not this week, but a couple months ago. And it was actually a good game because they were both so bad. but I feel like that was in November, and now we're looking at a Bulls team that's a little bit a different story, especially the past month, right?
Very much so. They had got a couple players back. Nikola Mirotic came back after the fight incident. He's back, and he's been terrific. Lauri Markkanen has been an unbelievable rookie. And David Nwaba is another player that was hurt that came back the same time that Mirotic came back, and he is an energetic player. This is a team that is playing the way that Fred Hoiberg, the head coach, has wanted to play. Share the ball, space yourself, hit the outside shot. So they have collectively have done a good job offensively. They still struggle somewhat on defense because this is a young team. But I've talked to a lot of the coaches, and they say that this is a very coachable team. They have a lot of skills. They're more athletic than they have been in the last couple of years. So they are now playing up to what the Bulls management has wanted them to be.
And, of course, the Bulls' big draft pick that the Bulls got in exchange for Jimmy Butler was used to pick Lauri Markkanen. How's he doing? Is he a real thing? Is he the real deal here in terms of rookies?
Nyla, as a 20-year-old, he plays like he's 26, 27. He is that good. They love the way he plays. He could shoot from the outside. He plays defense. He has no trouble matching up with certain players that you would think that he'd be intimidated by. They do want him to gain 15 pounds. The projection is that he'd be moved to center at some point because that's the way the league is going. He's very bright. He's got a I wouldn't say it's cockiness. He's got a lot of confidence in what he can do. And that's unusual for a young man who's only played 1 year of college ball here. But his international play, I think, is what's helped him become the player that he is right now.
Cheryl, we just have about a minute or so left. And I just want to do a quick wrap-up question about the Blackhawks, about the Olympics. What are you most excited about in the world of sports and Chicago athletes or Illinois athletes coming up over the next couple of months?
Well, the one thing is the Blackhawks are in a strange situation. We are getting reports that Corey Crawford may not be able to come back this season because he has vertigo condition, which would be very tough for this team to make the playoffs, which we would not even think of to talk about just a couple of months ago. But as far as the Olympics go, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in South Korea with the Olympics. I don't know how many fans are going to go there to watch it, but it doesn't seem to have the buzz that it's had in the past, and that's kind of interesting to me. I don't think there's a lot of buzz about these Winter Olympics.
No, I think you're right, and I wonder, and I guess that gets to my question I was asking you in the beginning about just buzz with sports in general right now. It's interesting because it's January, people are home, they're watching TV. I feel like January is a good time for people to kind of turn to sports, but I feel like I'm not feeling it as much this year.
Yeah, I don't feel it for the Olympics. Like, and I'm an Olympic nut. You know, I love the Olympics. I don't have the passion about it for this year for some reason. I don't know what it is. You know, the other thing is the NHL is not sending players there, so you don't get the buzz via the NHL for the Olympics, which is unusual. So it's kind of a quandary right now. But the NBA right now is the hot team. They're the hot league right now. Everyone's talking about whatever LeBron James has to do or say, the Golden State Warriors, and the fact that, you know, you have NBA coaches having no fear about talking about politics. That's why they're more in the news than any other league right now.
We will see what happens with sports and this weekend. I want to thank WBEZ sports contributor Cheryl Reistout. Cheryl, thanks for being with me.
You're welcome, Nyla.
That does it for us today. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.